welcome back to the Pink Grapefruit Podcast.
Hi, it's good to be back again with all of you. Hope life is going well.
Yes. And, you know, I'm just going to be straight up about this, Deanna. We struggled with the topic today.
We really struggled with the topic, which is unusual for us.
Yeah.
There's usually something kind of percolating. And the second you and I get in the same physical space, it just kind of all lights up and goes. And we come up with our answer. And man, did we have to cover.
I think there's so much going on that we were distracted.
I think so, too. But I think that is a lot.
We did come up with a person that we're going to reference here.
On here. So big shout out, because he's the reason we're actually able to record here today. Robert Roland Smith had a great post on LinkedIn. He posted on here and he said, you know, these are some edgy questions for leaders. And I think leaders need to be grappling with more edgy questions. And of course, that caught our eye a lot, rather than things like, you know, what's our forecast look like and how's the recruiting going and
the typical
ones.
Or how do we get people back into our workspace?
Yes. Which is and just, oh God, that's a whole other episode on itself. You guys should hear us go on and on about remote versus hybrid and in person.
Right.
I loved these, though, because truthfully, our team does a ton of leadership development for organizations. And I would say, correct me if you think I'm wrong, Kathy, on this, by and large, a lot of the participants in them tend to gravitate towards the tactical skills that we teach during that.
Sure.
Rather than, you know, like what really makes a leader? It's the way they think and the way they show up and, you know, the hard questions they do ask themselves. It's so much more than learning a particular skill.
Well, yeah, we do a lot of tactical training because many people in organizations don't do that well, don't move into action well.
They do need it.
So they do need it. And, you know, we've talked about favoring a strategic doing as a methodology. But we also have gravitated more recently to this leader development than the mindset of a leader. And so I was really drawn to some of these questions, gritty questions that leaders really aren't asking, I don't think.
I've never really heard the leaders that I know well or those that I follow and read things. I haven't seen them tackle this. So kudos to Robert Roland Smith for bringing this up today. I like it. So let's just jump in.
Yeah. So the first question, which you and I were pondering right before we hit the record button, how much is enough?
How much is enough?
That's a loaded question.
That is a loaded question for sure. How much is enough money?
How much is enough hours to work?
How much is enough productivity to expect from someone? If I am highly productive in my role and I get that done in 34, 36 hours a week, do you constantly need to push more? So if you're like, oh, okay, well, Deanna, she can get that done in that amount of time and she's highly efficient. What would happen? She's on salary. What would happen if we just push that so she has to work 46 hours a week?
Or how much is enough on a personal life basis? How much is enough money?
Yeah.
You know, before you're giving a lot away. How much is enough of anything, really?
Well, and there's some studies out there that show, and, you know, forgive me, I don't have it in front of me now, but it is close to six figures, somewhere between that, I think, $85,000 and $100,000 mark, where most people in the country can cover all the basic housing and groceries and car payments and some of that. And then after that is when it starts to shift. So when your basic lifestyle's covered, that really starts to come in. So how much more is there? I think it depends on your why.
Yeah, and we're not saying, I mean, we're not saying nobody needs to make more than $80,000 a year.
Oh, God,
it's contextual to where you live and those types of things.
Absolutely.
But it does bring up a good point. Again, this kind of comes into the polarity of the globe as well. Everybody's reading studies about the wealthier are getting wealthier, the disadvantaged are not making any headway. And then there's the middle band, which I consider us in. And, you know, how much is enough of that? But how much is enough enrichment, too, in the intersect of life and work?
Well, that's the thing. And I think that's where money comes in. Like, I remember hearing a great quote from a personal leader of mine in an organization years ago, probably 20 years ago or close to it at this point. And he said, money's good for the good that it can do.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. his dad accused him of being just sort of greedy because he kept, you know,
piling
his business
on the money.
Was, yeah, it was growing huge and it was just, yeah. you know, million after million. And he's like, when is it enough for you? And he said, but dad, money's good for the good that it can do. If I am hoarding it and using it unwisely, that's a different story.
Right.
But I'm doing a lot of cool, good things on the planet, right, with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you look at our leaders really looking at their organization from that standpoint, because if you've got a huge section of your population that can't cover those basics all the time, then that's a level of stress that those people live in that it's just not sustainable.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Not for humanity overall.
I'm going to give another twist to how much is enough, because I think this is really pertinent to many people today. And it fits into this earnings capacity. But how much is enough formal education?
We just talked about that, didn't we? We just had that conversation.
Versus, you know, what should organizations be helping people get through to attain their aspirations or, you know, where they could go? How much is enough formal education versus how much should the organization be supporting and helping?
Well, okay, so I'll take this path. Is it the organization's responsibility?
True. True.
Or is it mine? If I want to better my job, my life, my income, my flexibility, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. is it my job to go out and figure out my education or my skills that I need to gain? Or does the company, do companies in general have a social and, you know, economic responsibility
yeah. right.
to provide that? I don't know that we've ever in this country and globally as well, had to look at that question from a leader's standpoint, because we were, you know, we were an industrial society. We were an agricultural society, you know, we're a knowledge society. Now we're moving into a technological society.
Mm-hmm.
That has some different requirements, you know, because we talked about it, you know, our generation followed the path for the most part, like our parents did.
Right.
But not everybody's better off than their parents were necessarily.
Right. And we did all the higher education, master's degrees, all those types of things.
Right.
Are you better off?
Are you better off? And a lot of people have followed that path, right? And it's the younger generations mm-hmm. that are starting to push on that and say,
right.
well, wait a second. What if I don't need a 4-year degree? What if I can, you know, for instance, work for Amazon and they have this burgeoning, huge learning program.
Right.
For all different types of skills and degrees and directions that people want to go. I guess, I don't know. I would venture to say that, yes, companies have a moral and economic responsibility
I
to
would
provide
so.
That
yeah.
if they want retention.
Right. I think there's other things that go into it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just one
yeah.
piece. But you're right. And even coming back to the productivity, when is it enough? We are, as Americans, we are busier and working more than pretty much every other developed country, even Japan, which surprised me. Like, did you know we work over 200 hours more on average as an American per year than people in Japan?
But their productivity in that study was significantly higher.
It was. It
yeah.
was.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about the hours you put in. And so when is it enough?
Right. Right. And I think that leads into another question that Robert posed that I really liked, and that's, you know, the organizations need to understand their value proposition and their pitch and story. I mean, everybody's in competition for skilled workforce. So how true is the story that we tell about our business? You just cited an organization that's pumping a lot of money into different programs for employee skill development, and they've made it very clear that they're, you know, it's yes, it's going to benefit their business, Amazon, but they also made it clear in the post that it's, yeah, you're probably going to take some skills and go elsewhere at some point. They're not trying to recreate the gold watch society is what my impression
that's,
is.
That's done. And
yeah.
if you as a company really are like, how can we just get people to stay? Let it go.
Yeah.
People, they're not. We're not that way in our society anymore. We physically move. Like, you know, how many times did my parents move? My parents moved twice in my lifetime. Yeah. That was it.
Yeah, mine, three times.
Yes. See, and, you know, we have to let go of some of those things. So,
but it'd be interesting to see, you know, how true is that story that, you know, the organization is telling. I'd love to hear from some people who work in Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, is it true? Do you feel supported? Do you feel that that is an accurate representation of what your organization is doing? They're obviously putting a lot of media presence out there in that regard,
right,
of their support for their talent. But how true is it? A lot of times we spin stories and
it looks great on the surface, looks great on the website. What's it really like on the daily for people?
Yeah. Does your story really match your culture?
And I think that's probably one of the things that we run across most often is that the story, the average Becky and Joe come forward and tell us, does not match what's on the website. I've run across two very specific ones where, you know, they put all kinds of great things on the website. They checked all the boxes.
Right.
Yet when we talked to their people, they're like, that couldn't be further from the truth. That isn't even there.
Or oftentimes we've seen this where the organization maybe has a mission supporting underrepresented groups, but the underrepresented groups within their own organization feel disenfranchised.
Yes. They don't even feel like it's for them or that they have control and say over what it really needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
They just designed something in a silo somewhere and moved forward. So I would even venture to say, as a leader, what's the story you're telling yourself? And if you've got a board or, you know, you've got your colleagues of C-suite or VP leaders around you, what's the story that all of you tell yourselves about the business?
And then go to the front line and ground truth it.
Yes. It's kind of, you know what it reminds me of? Reminds me of the show years ago, Undercover Boss.
Oh, yeah.
I loved Undercover Boss. And because they always found out that the story that they thought was true
wasn't happening.
It wasn't true at all.
Yeah.
Good and bad. There was all kinds of great things going on that they weren't even aware of, that then because they were really good leaders at their core, they were able to take and leverage that and expand it and offer new opportunities. Yeah. What is the story you're telling yourself? Have you stopped to really think about it?
And of course, there's ways to do that that make it safe for your frontline people to give you that information. But and that's one of the things, hallmarks that we do in working with organizations, is really get the info on the ground.
Well, because if you look at the, you know, if you say, oh, no, there's no retaliation in our company. You know, we've got this statement, or I know we set it up this way. You might want to confirm that by going to ask some people on the front lines and in those entry-level positions and say, is it really playing out that way?
Yeah.
Or is my story incorrect?
What do you need?
Yeah. What do you need?
Yeah.
What do you need? So that's a good question. The other one that we really liked, and this I can go down a big existential hole for any of you that know me on this, but why shouldn't our employees think of being here as just a job? Why is that a criminal thought, Kathy?
I don't think it is. I think this is what the younger generation is really grappling with, honestly.
I agree.
This is the big thing. And why, you know, there's so many posts going on now about the younger generation doesn't want to be managers. There's no incentive for this. There just isn't. Like, what are you doing to make it worthwhile for them to see themselves in leadership roles? Or, I mean, really, we're just struggling with lots of work-life balance. Why isn't it okay to say at this point? I've even talked to some friends who are older who have a lot of experience and are burned out, right? So they go to look for a job and they say, I don't want to continue to go up the ladder. You know, my jam is really helping to train younger people. So they're maybe even looking at lateral or lower level positions kind of as a job, right? They don't get any traction. It's shocking to me.
They don't, because somehow in this society, we've come up with these unwritten rules and belief systems that if you're not constantly striving for what's next, right? More back
more.
Into the how much is
yeah,
enough.
How much is enough, right?
I need more. I need a better job, a bigger job. I need to identify with this role and career. And instead of what's so bad about me showing up, doing the job as it was posted and written and I accepted in exchange for money and some
right.
benefits.
Right.
And then I go home.
Right.
But we tend to look down
That's
our noses
bad
at that.
Stigma.
We do, don't you think?
Oh,
we
I don't.
We've
do.
Always. We've I always totally looked do. At that.
Yeah. I'm like I said, I'm just shocked at my good friend who's got this wealth of experience, and this person isn't getting any traction on applications because they're actually looking for less responsibility, but imparting their wisdom.
Right. It's and because just, it's a different, sometimes we are in different seasons in life. It doesn't
yeah.
mean that we're not bringing a ton of value with us, but we get judged, men and women alike, probably
sure.
maybe men or maybe women more so
right.
than men at you know, certain age. But why is that so bad to say, I don't want to work like a beast like
right.
I have for two decades already?
Or maybe why is it so bad to get a high performing person who does deliver on the job for 18 months or 2 years, who does a great
right.
job for you?
Yes.
Why is that a bad thing?
And then they are going to move on to what their plan is next. The thing is, if people are going to do that, right? Again, it goes back to that. We've talked about it before. Organizations are nothing more than people that are organized, that are coming
right.
together for a common purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And if those people have decided, and the younger generations are, that we're doing this differently. There is no 30, 40-year gold watch
no.
society anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to stay and give it my best for 18 months or two and a half years, and then I'm moving to what's next because it fits my life
mm-hmm.
and my direction, and it fills me up, matches my values,
right,
challenges me in a different way, whatever, then...
Yeah. And then, of course, the deeper question that I think is posed here is, what are you actually doing to make people engage in not thinking of it just as a job?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
you can take
one.
The flip side of that. So if you
side.
Really want them to think of it as more than a job, then
like making an impact, or am I living
yes.
my cause? Am I delivering on my cause or my value proposition? And
yeah, do my personal
yeah.
values align with the company? Mm-hmm. Is the company doing something good with their profits? You know, or
right.
are they just filling pockets at the top?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And again, back
we
to that.
We sound anti-capitalist.
We kind of do a little bit today. We're so not. I just think it's gotten so out of balance, though.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gotten out of balance for so many of the, you know, American population, where you can just work your tail off and you can try to gain some skills and you know, you can't keep up.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Another question from Robert's post. I love this one because it feeds right into my strategic doing mantra and work. And that's, if we were to collaborate more and compete less, are we sure we would lose money?
I love this question, too, because I've not really heard it set up that way before. People automatically assume that competition drives a better bottom line.
Well, and a better mousetrap.
Yes, and a better mousetrap. And
yeah.
the people, your best people, love to compete.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
If you don't like competition, maybe you're not the best one in the whole workforce for the company, right?
Right.
They get kind of gold stars if they're the competitive ones.
Right, right. And I think about this, too, from the challenges, the wicked challenges we are facing globally, and what I know as a strategic doing fellow and those who are practitioners know is the landscape isn't getting easier.
Not at all.
Not at all. And cognitively, we need to develop these skills of collaboration. As you just pointed out, we reward the competition, but we're not going to solve the challenges that we're facing that are getting bigger, that are getting more global, without collaboration.
Well, and collaboration, I would venture to say, is what needs to lead the way more than competition does right now.
Right.
And as humans, we have a strong desire to want to collaborate. That goes back into helping guard against burnout and building better connections so people don't feel so isolated and lonely when they're working remotely. And I mean, there's a million threads to go down with that, right?
Right.
That collaboration is part of the solution with mm-hmm. that, and bringing in diverse thought and perspective.
And also the pace of change and issues is so fast that if we don't leverage recombinant innovation, we're not going to make headway on these grand challenges.
Not at all. And in fact, we're not going to do well as a human collective or as a society if we don't put things like collaboration in play in a mm-hmm. in a heavy way. That's where a lot of the magic comes from. It doesn't always come from trying to beat out your colleague.
Right.
Right. Right. On something or
and
another
I think,
team.
Yeah, we mentioned global challenges, grand challenges, but even on the local level, we need to start building and flexing our muscles around collaboration.
Because, and what that really means. Like, you can't just shoot from the hip about collaboration. There really is a process to that and a learning to mm-hmm. that. So, you know, if you're kind of stuck, those are the things we help with.
Well, right.
That's our space.
Collaboration isn't just, I know them. I'm connected with them.
Yes.
And we share a bit of information.
Yeah.
And I eke out what I choose to share. That's not collaboration.
No. Or just freely talking during meetings.
And right.
Chat, 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 chat.
Or lunch dates.
Oh, we're all, yes, we all collaborated during the meeting today.
Right.
No, there is a systematic structure to that. It's
right.
loose and free flowing, and it has all kinds of great stuff in it. But it is a skill to learn the art. It's an art. That's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah.
There's an art to collaborating.
There is an art to collaboration, and it's something we need to work harder at.
Oh, we could go on. We got a bunch of questions. I think we'll probably come back and do another episode and dive into some more of these next time. Hopefully this opened up a few brain cells and thinking corridors in your brain for you today. It did for us. So as a leader out there, if you haven't put a little time in your calendar to dedicate to creative and reflective thinking, I would challenge mm-hmm. you to do that. It's been profound as I put that into my operating week.
Yes.
To
yes.
do that. And take some of these questions. Let us know. Do you have a gritty question that you see that leaders need to be asking themselves for the betterment of their own ability to lead or for the organization?
A blind side.
A blind side. You know, what are the gritty questions that no one's asking?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Have a look at Robert's LinkedIn site. We'll put it in the information about the podcast too. And thanks for the inspiration, Robert.
Yeah. Yeah. It turned out to be a fun chat for us today. We hope you enjoyed it. Got some good nuggets to take away.
Thanks for joining us today for the Pink Grapefruit Podcast. If you would like assistance with organizational culture alignment, mentorship programs, strategic directioning, process optimization, or leader development, talk to us.
Absolutely. Find out more about our cutting-edge services at k2ohsolutions.com, where we're committed to elevating organizations of character. And if you like this podcast, be sure to hit the subscribe button and join us every week. Until next time.